Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Friday, June the 5th, 2020. Section A. MISD budget calls for $21 million increase. By Stuart Doreen, S-D-O-R-E-E-N, at HearstNP.com. The proposed Midland ISD budget for the 2020-21 school year, presented to board members this week, called for more than $21 million in additional expenditures. The board had a final scheduled budget workshop on Wednesday before the June 22nd meeting, when members will vote on the budget. Adoption of the tax rates for the 2020-21 year is set for August 17th, after the district receives certified values from Midland County Central Appraisal District. The 2021 budget calls for $392.639 million in expenditures, which is a 5.8% increase compared to the current school year's budget. The district also expects $396.746 million in revenues, $16 million less than this year, a $108.578 million recapture payment, which is $14.798 million less than this year, and $4.107 million in excess funds. The budget includes $34.116 million in superintendent and board priorities. Those priorities include $5.590 million to increase starting teacher pay to $56,500, $1.201 million to increase premium minimum support staff pay to $12 per hour with a 3% increase, $2.197 million for a pay scale adjustment for other staff, $2.197 million for a pay scale adjustment for other staff with a 3% increase, $1.8 million in innovative compensation for perfect attendance and early resignation, and $2.127 million for a teacher technology initiative. Priorities also include $1.731 million for additional staff, described in the meeting as bilingual, special education, student services, technology, counseling, and transformational department staff. There is also $2 million for a public address intercom upgrade for secondary schools, $1.629 million for a reverse osmosis system for all secondary campuses, $1.042 million for synthetic turf fields for the varsity football teams, $2.201 million for synthetic turf fields for baseball game fields, $1.462 million for synthetic turf football fields, and $1.993 million to upgrade lighting for athletic fields, and $1.198 million for four-lane athletic tracks around freshman and junior schools, except for San Jacinto. Board member Robert Marquez said during the meeting it was important to note that the football fields at the junior high and freshman campuses are used by other sports and during physical education classes, and the fields save the district money when it comes to watering. MISD staff also added about $190,000 for the fine arts, including money for band and orchestra instruments, violin, cello, and bass racks for all elementary campuses, and refurbishing the auditorium at Lee High School. Superintendent Orlando Riddick said the district is on its way to increasing the starting salary pay for teachers to $60,000 and raising the per-hour pay for some staff to a minimum of $15. He said those goals could be accomplished in the next two or three budget years, if not earlier. Board President Rick Davis said the district's healthy fund balance, more than $1.58 million heading into the 2020-21 school year, according to information at a previous budget workshop, will help the district should the Texas legislature negatively impact education funding in the upcoming legislative session. Board member John Trusciutti asked about the availability of the district's golden penny, which allows board members to increase the tax rate by a penny without having to go to voters. Davis told Trusciutti that there is no net financial benefit to enacting the golden penny and therefore no reason to increase the tax burden on local taxpayers. Midland ISD staff also stated that teachers, librarians, and nurses will be among the employees that receive a $300 bonus in an upcoming paycheck. The increase is called a virtual learning bonus for teachers going above and beyond and using their own resources during the last few months of school. It also allows the district to meet the required $10.687 million in spending for teachers, librarians, school nurses, and counselors in House Bill 3, passed during the last legislative session. HB 3 required 30% of the total funding increase to be set aside for compensation increases. Board members saw this week that the district had $431,845 remaining to be spent to meet that requirement. National Weather Service. Midland has had the fifth warmest May spring on record. By Stuart Doreen, S-D-O-R-E-E-N at HurstNP.com. A cool spell at the end of the month couldn't stop May 2020 from being one of the hottest in Midland's history. The National Weather Service reported this week that the average temperature at Midland International Airport was 77.6 degrees, which is 4 degrees higher than the typical average in May and the fifth warmest average for the month in Midland's recorded history. And if the Climate Prediction Center is correct, the higher-than-average temperatures will continue through at least August. The CPC is calling for a 50% chance of higher-than-average temperatures in June and a 60% chance of higher temperatures through August. The May report included 8 days of 100-degree temperatures, including the warmest day at 105 degrees on May 18th. Those warmer days helped create an average high for the month of 92.5 degrees. That was nearly 5 degrees above average. The National Weather Service also reported it was the fifth warmest spring, March through May, on record. The 68.57 degree average was 4.07 degrees above normal. The warmest spring happened in 2018, and the top five warmest springs in Midland have taken place since 2011. In addition to being hot, the NWS showed the dry conditions continued. The Weather Service reported 0.14 inch of precipitation, which was 1.6 inches less than average for the month. After a wet start for the year, dry conditions have fallen on Midland. The NWS reports 0.15 inches of rain during April and May. Normal combined rainfall for those months is 2.4. The Climate Prediction Center is calling for average rainfall through August. The NWS 7-day forecast shows high temperatures in the upper 90s and low 100s, and low temperatures mostly around 70 degrees with no rainfall. Golden Chick introduces new sandwich by J.C. Lewis. jacy.lewis at hurstnp.com. Dallas-based restaurant Golden Chick has launched a chicken sandwich to rival Popeyes and Chick-fil-A. The new menu item is a 5-ounce hand-breaded chicken breast, deep-fried, placed upon 5 tasty pickles and a layer of the brand's house-made Latazing sauce. Golden Chick's hot yeast rolls serve as the sandwich's buns. The rolls are baked fresh daily. The bun gives the sandwich a subtle sweet taste. The Big and Golden Sandwich is the brand's first chicken breast sandwich. The sandwich by itself is $3.99. A combo of sandwich, fries, and a drink is $6.99. Sandwiches are available at all 190 of the chain's restaurants. The Midland restaurant at 400 East Florida, a second location, is set to open at 2805 Big Spring Street. Restaurants had to close their doors during the pandemic, but some doors will remain closed. Brew Street Bakery announced on Facebook that both locations would remain closed for the foreseeable future. Green's Restaurant, 20 Village Circle, has closed and for rent signs are in the window. Freebird's World Burrito, 3322 North Loop 250, has permanently closed and signage has been taken down. Ohana Poke Bowl, the at 3303 North Midkiff, closed before the pandemic and has not announced a reopening date. It has been listed as permanently closed on Google. City confirms 5 more cases. Total is at 146, from staff reports. The City of Midland Health Department is currently conducting its investigation on 5 new confirmed cases of COVID-19 in Midland County, bringing the overall case count to 146. With these 5 cases, 17 have been confirmed since Monday, according to information from the city. For the 145th and 146th confirmed cases, source of exposure was travel to New Braunfels. The patients, both females in their 30s, were tested by private provider and are isolating at home. One of the women is an employee at Midland Health and last worked on Wednesday. Employee Health is following up and monitoring employees with known contact. No patients were exposed, according to a press release from the city. An employee at Manor Park is the 144th confirmed case. The patient is a female in her 40s who was tested by a private provider and is currently self-isolating at home. She last worked at Manor Park on Tuesday. The source of exposure is household contact to known case. The other 2 cases were confirmed on Thursday as a female in her 30s and a female in her 60s. They are both self-isolating at home. The first woman was tested by Midland Health. The source of exposure is contact to a known case in Odessa. The other woman was tested by a private provider, and the source of exposure is community acquired.
Hello, this is April reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Friday, June 5, 2020. Ashton Lodge Parade. Residents at Ashton Medical Lodge are treated to a graduation-themed parade May 28. Residents sat outside as family members and friends drove around the facility honking horns and waving. United Way to assess coronavirus impact. United Way of Midland is joining United Ways of Texas and United Way affiliates across the state in launching a survey to assess the economic impact of the coronavirus crisis. All Midlanders are invited to complete the United Way COVID-19 survey at bit.ly/2y1k2cl. The survey takes about 10 minutes and will remain open through June 24, according to a press release from the UW Midland. Individual responses are confidential. The survey seeks information on a wide range of topics, including the most pressing concerns, job changes, child care challenges, and economic changes that Texas families are navigating. Every Midland family has felt the impact of COVID-19, and even though much of our community has reopened, life remains uncertain, said Carrie Hennigan, United Way of Midland President and CEO, in a statement. This survey is an opportunity to better understand the impact that COVID-19 has had on Midlanders to help inform state and community leaders in how best to support Texans in need. Wonder Girls Summer Camp will be online. Crisis Center of West Texas is taking its 4th annual Wonder Girls Summer Camp online for Permian Basin girls who will be entering 5th through 8th grade. CCWTX will release a set of activities every Wednesday in July. Participants can complete the activities on their own schedule. The center has limited supplies and t-shirts to distribute to Permian Basin girls, according to a press release from the center. Supplies may be picked up on June 29. Time has not been sent. To apply, go to bit.ly/WG2020-apply. Deadline is 6 p.m. June 19. Anyone who would like to donate so CCWTX can purchase extra supplies can do so at bit.ly/WG2020-donate. For more information, contact Elizabeth Texiera, Prevention Services Director, at elizabeth@ccwtx.org or 333-2527. KMB offers Kids Club. Keep Midland Beautiful is looking for kids 8 and older to be part of the Clue Crew Club. The club, which kicked off Wednesday, will meet in person practicing social distancing in groups of 10 for recycling-related activities, according to an email from KMB. Clue Crew Club remaining meetings are 9 to 10 a.m., July 9 at KMB office, 3500 North A Street, Suite 1500. Theme, Chihuly Art Project. 9 to 10 a.m., August 5 at West Texas Food Bank, 1601 West Cliff Drive. Theme, papermaking. Club members will receive a free t-shirt. For more information, go to keepmidlandbeautiful.org. Clinics offer coronavirus tests. First Med of Midland, 201-1403, www.midlandurgentcareclinics.com. Cash price for virtual visit for COVID-19, $75. Cash price for nasal swab PCR test, $70. Cash price for COVID-19 antibody test, $50. Cash price for office visit, $120 to $150. Midland Memorial Hospital, 68 nurse. MidlandHealth.org. Mobile testing center at West Campus for COVID-19 nasal swab PCR. Must call for appointment. Antibody testing at West Campus or Main Campus Direct Access, 68 Nurse or 221-1111. Cash price for antibody testing, $50. Signature Care, 699-2601, ercare24.com/Midland. Cash price for COVID-19 nasal swab, PCR test, visit plus test, $175. Cash price for antibody test, visit plus test, $175. Cash price for both COVID-19 nasal swab, PCR, and antibody, $300. If patients are insured, we'll need to pay copay. Rest will be billed to insurance. Copay waived for first responders. Source, Midland Health. Today in history. Today is Friday, June 5, the 157th day of 2020. There are 209 days left in the year. Today's highlight. On June 5, 1968, Senator Robert F. Kennedy was shot and mortally wounded after claiming victory in California's Democratic presidential primary at the Ambassador Hotel in Los Angeles. Assassin Sirhan Bashar Sirhan was arrested at the scene. Source, Associated Press.
Guest View. Policing across the country is in need of overhaul. Hard problems require tough solutions, and in the case of decades of tension between minority communities and police departments, the remedy requires all of us to acknowledge that the problem is more pervasive than the transgressions of a few bad apples. The bad apples narrative, while true in specific incidents, doesn't allow for the necessary introspection that propels broader reform. Just to be clear, police officers have one of the toughest jobs, and those who do their jobs with respect and dignity deserve our esteem and support for their dedication to public service. But consider this disquieting statistic. According to a Brookings Institution essay, African Americans are 3.5 times more likely than white counterparts to be killed by police when they are not attacking and don't have a weapon. Think about that. Lethal force is more likely to be used against African Americans even when they don't pose a threat. It is for that reason that African American parents have the talk with their children, especially male teenagers, about the unpredictability of police encounters. This is a cold statistic, not a mushy bad apples narrative. The awkward conclusion is that the color of one's skin is a determining factor in many police stops, use of force, and arrests. To our mind, that signals a systemic problem that firing a few bad apples won't resolve. For example, federal investigations during the Obama administration into police practices after high-profile incidents in Baltimore, Cleveland, New Orleans, Chicago, and Ferguson, Missouri, all found massive structural and cultural problems that extend beyond the officers in a particular case. In Baltimore, the report concluded that racial disparities existed at every stage of BPD's enforcement actions, from the initial decision to stop individuals on Baltimore streets to searches, arrests, and uses of force. And this was after controlling the population and crime rates. The death of George Floyd is an appropriate time for departments everywhere to reflect and reassess. Effective policing is a two-way street. It requires community trust and support, as well as officers who work to earn it. This is not the time to excuse or accuse. This is the time to look into police departmental practices and revise practices that adversely or unjustly impact communities that officers have sworn to protect. Every department should be reviewing officer training and tactics with special attention to how to de-escalate situations and understanding implicit biases that everyone has. And police officers who patrol the right way also must be willing to break the thin blue line that too often has protected officers who should not have worn a badge or a gun. And this review should not be one and done in response to Floyd's death. It should be standard operating procedure. It's the morally right thing to do and might also prevent cities from paying settlements for wrongful death or civil rights violations. Police officers have the power of life and death and must understand that their actions in extreme circumstances can be charged as murder. Only recently have we seen police officers charged with murder, and three of those cases occurred in North Texas. Botham Jean and Atassiano Jefferson were shot and killed inside their homes, and Jordan Edwards died when a police officer fired at a vehicle he was in. The moment and the opportunity to reform is before us. If we fail to seize it, we will regret it for generations. The Opinion Page, a commentary by Condoleezza Rice, special to the Washington Post. Words cannot dull the pain of George Floyd's family. Like many black families before them, they find themselves in the spotlight for reasons that every parent, sibling, and spouse dreads. While his death has catalyzed a symbolic call to action, he was not a symbol to his loved ones. He was a father, brother, and son. I can only pray that they find the peace that passes understanding. In the wake of Floyd's death, Americans and people around the world are experiencing shock, grief, outrage, a set of emotions that too often are repeated. If the past is a guide, these feelings will fade and we will return to our normal lives. But something tells me not this time. Floyd's horrific death should be enough to finally move us to positive action. Perhaps this is like the moment in 1955 when Rosa Parks refused to move to the back of the bus. Or perhaps this is like that fateful Sunday in September 1963, quite personal to me, when a bomb in a Birmingham church killed four girls from my neighborhood and shook our nation to its core. Some six decades later, perhaps all of us, regardless of skin color, are, to quote Mississippi sharecropper and civil rights activist Fannie Lou Hamer, sick and tired of being sick and tired. Our country has often moved forward and been made better through peaceful protests. But our cities must stop burning. Innocent people, including many minority and immigrant business owners, are watching their livelihoods go up in smoke. There is no excuse for looting and criminality, and offenders must be stopped. But a call for calm is not enough. This time, we must remain vigilant and maintain our determination to make a difference. Beyond justice for Floyd, systemic change is necessary to make our institutions more just. Yet all the structural reforms in the world are insufficient to remove the shadow hanging over every incident of this kind. To be black is to be forced to overcome implicit and explicit reactions to the color of your skin. It might be dismissive or underestimation or presumption of how you think. In circumstances, it might be fear. We encounter these responses even among decent people who sincerely do not want to react that way. The good news is that these emotions can be overcome, and often are, with the respect that builds when people know one another as human beings, as friends, neighbors, co-workers, and teammates. Still, we simply must acknowledge that society is not colorblind and probably never will be. Progress comes when people treat one another with respect, as if we were colorblind. Unless then, and until then, we are honest that race is still an anchor around our country's neck, that shadow will never be lifted. Our country has a birth defect. Africans and Europeans came to this country together, but one group was in chains. In time, the very constitution that counted slaves as 3/5 of a man became a powerful tool in according the descendants of slaves their basic rights. That work has been long and difficult, but it has made a difference. We are better than we were. I grew up in segregated Jim Crow Alabama, where no one batted an eye if the police killed a black man. There wouldn't have been even a footnote in the local press. So it is a source of pride for me that so many have taken to the streets peacefully to say that they care, that they too are sick and tired of being sick and tired. Yet protests take our country only so far. The road to healing must begin with respectful but honest and deep conversations, not judgments about who we were, who we are, and who we want to become. Let us talk with, not at, each other, in our homes, schools, workplaces, and places of worship. And if we are to make progress, let us vow to check the language of recrimination at the door. As United Americans, we can then turn our fears into faith, hope, compassion, and action. And then we can accept and carry out our shared responsibility to build a more perfect union. Yet, any call to action will be empty if it does not move us to individual responsibility. We all have a role to play in moving our country forward, in ensuring that our democracy delivers not just for those who have, but also for those who seek and for those in need. So I ask my fellow Americans, what will each of you do? My personal passion is educational opportunity because it is a partial shield against prejudice. It is not a perfect shield, I know, but it gives people a fighting chance. In my conversations, I want to discuss why the learning gap for black kids is so stubborn and what can be done about it. What is your question about the impact of race on the lives of Americans, and what will you do to find answers? Condoleezza Rice was Secretary of State from 2005 to 2009. She is a professor at Stanford University's Graduate School of Business and a senior fellow in public policy at the Hoover Institution, where she will become director on September 1st. Obituaries and death notices. Noah Ora Stephen Gonzalez, 23 of Midland, passed away Monday, July 1st. He was born August 31st, 1996, in Midland, where he was also raised and educated. He is survived by his mother and father, 3 sisters, 6 nephews, 4 nieces, numerous aunts and uncles and cousins. Viewing will be Sunday, June 7th, from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m., with evening services starting at 7 p.m. at Luella Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home. A funeral mass is set for Monday, June 8th at 10 a.m. at Our Lady of Guadalupe Shrine. Funeral service is under the direction of Luella Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home and Chapel. Family messages and condolences may be emailed to pipkin@nts-online.net. Gilbert Bobby Vera Cruz, 67, of Stanton, passed away June 3rd. Funeral services will be held at 10 a.m. Monday, June 8th, at Primera Iglesia Batista in Midland. Interment will follow at Serenity Memorial Gardens Cemetery. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Picklin Welsh Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelsh.com. Robert Foster, 81, of Midland, passed away on Wednesday, June 3rd. No services are planned at this time. He is survived by his wife, his children, sisters, and numerous grandchildren. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Picklin Welsh Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelsh.com.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Odessa American for Friday, June 5th, 2020. Section A. Quintella Wins State Principal Award by Ruth Campbell. It's taken roughly 5 nominations, but Ector College Prep Success Academy Principal Charles Quintella has won the Region 18 Middle Level Principal of the Year for the Texas Association of Secondary School Principals. Quintella and Assistant Principal Regan Paquette say it has taken a lot of blood, sweat, and tears to get to this point. Paquette noted that the nomination process was difficult and time-consuming and involves getting letters of recommendation and just information about Quintella. "I'm so excited," she said. "I think he really deserves it. He deserves way more than this, but I think that this is huge. I'm excited for him because it's very well deserved." His administrative team nominated him. Quintella also wants to credit the cafeteria workers, custodians, clerks, counselors, students, teachers, administrators, and support staff for the laurel. He said he has been in education for nearly 30 years. "I'm going to be humble about it because the work that it entails to get the award is real grueling. The shelf life of a principal nowadays is way shorter than it used to be, even 10 years ago. I've been a principal now 13, 14 years, and exhaustion is all I can say," Quintella said. "This year has been especially taxing with the August 31st mass shooting to start off the year, followed by a student dying in a car accident just a couple of weeks later, and then the year being cut short by the coronavirus pandemic. A former Ector student, Layla Hernandez, was one of the 7 people killed and 25 injured by gunman Seth Ader. An Alpine native, Quintella earned a bachelor's degree in education from Sul Ross State University in Alpine, a master's of science in interdisciplinary studies from Texas State University, and a master's in educational leadership from University of Texas Permian Basin. Quintella was a teacher for 8 years and got into administration 22 years ago. He served 13 years as a principal. He said there were a lot of reasons why he got into administration, but one of them was a mentor who moved him in the direction of it. Quintella has taught middle and high school and been a principal at the elementary, middle, high school, alternative, and accelerated alternative levels. The accelerated alternative school enabled students to graduate early from high school and was in Monahans. He also was a teaching assistant at Sul Ross, which gives him 32 years in education. Along with Odessa and Monahans, he has taught in Weslaco and Fort Stockton. Quintella said winning the TASSPA award was like being selected for most valuable player without winning a ball game. "To me, it's bittersweet, but I feel like the fact of the matter is I've been part of several turnaround schools. I just felt like at this juncture I would like to start rounding out my career with a final, complete turnaround. In everybody's career, I feel like you deserve to be acknowledged for the good work you've done. A lot of people go through this cycle like I have been, being principal, and don't ever get acknowledged. It's crazy hard work, Quintela said. If you don't have a good team, you don't have a strong team. You crumble. Ector now provides a laptop computer to its roughly 1,500 students and administrators, have changed the campus culture. Ector Middle School was in its fifth year of improvement required status under state accountability standards, and if it didn't come off the list, it would have faced closure, or the Texas Education Commissioner would have appointed a board of managers over the whole district. Ector partnered with CEO Superintendent Robert Bleich's Ector Success Academy Network as a way to stay sanctions from the Texas Education Agency against the middle school for 2 years. Quintela said they probably had higher remote learning engagement than the rest of the district at more than 90%. He added that it was built into the curriculum because programs like Brainchild and Achieve were already used. But there was the challenge of helping students who didn't have a device or didn't have internet access. If they didn't have internet, they were going to provide them a paper packet system so they could pick it up. So we had to come up with a game plan for three different things, and we fulfilled them, and our success rate was 94%. Paquette said she is thankful she has gotten to work with Quintela because he has taught me so much. He's like the best leader and principal that I could ever have dreamed of working with, she said. Quintela said the two greatest days in our lives are when you're born, and the other is when you know your why. Murry on Virtual School and Football by Ruth Campbell. Looking at three possible scenarios for reopening in the fall, Ector County ISD Superintendent Scott Murry said the most likely is one combining in-person and virtual learning. The other two are going to be completely virtual, as ECISD did this spring, or opening completely as normal. This follows a spring where the district went virtual, with the option of printed packets due to the novel coronavirus. In addition, Murry said he looks at this time period like a blank slate, a chance to reimagine the education that's been in place for at least a century. The most likely opportunity is the one that we're spending a lot of time on. We'll call that a hybrid, Murry said. We fully anticipate next year that not every child nor every staff member will be physically in a building every day, and we are analyzing right now what that hybrid model might look like. Everything from how will we transport kids, knowing that buses will not be able to be fully loaded to capacity in ways that they have been in the past. How are we thinking about feeding kids, knowing that kids will not be able to gather together in large groups? How will we educate kids, knowing that not every child will be in school every day, Murry said. It is a complex opportunity. A task force and subcommittees made up of people from across the district, and who will include parents and high school students, will be working on these scenarios. Transportation. Murry said ECISD will need more transportation staff because fewer students can be transported on buses that might normally hold 70 students. We'll have to think about how do we operate a transportation system that might actually have to make multiple routes just to pick up students to attend school. Transportation is one of the significant complexities in this puzzle that we're trying to put together, Murry said. More janitors and custodians will also be needed to help keep students and staff members safe from COVID-19, especially if school days are lengthened and teachers, staff, and students come in at staggered times. Certainly, we'll need more people for meeting the disinfecting and cleaning opportunities that will exist all across our system, Murry said. Right now, he said ECISD does not anticipate any shortages of hand sanitizer and soap. Whether masks will be required for students has not yet been determined. On the question of whether there will be screening and testing students, or if there will be requirements if a student tests positive for COVID-19, Murray said that's a question they have not yet developed an answer for. We know that if a student or a staff member develops COVID-19 and they're physically present at school and there's a potential for exposure, we are going to have to respond. Our goal is to create an environment in which we would not have to close an entire school for a period of 14 or more days. So we will be limiting the movement of our students and staff members around campus because we fully anticipate students and staff members getting the virus at some point during the school year. And so we will be proactive in how we address that. As far as testing is concerned, Mary said, we will talk with our medical community, but right now we don't have any plans to offer testing at the schools. And I say that today on June 3rd, but as testing protocols continue to kind of unfold around our state and nation, that might look different come August. But today we don't have any plans to provide testing opportunities at our schools for either students or staff members. As the child care facilities for children of the local medical community at Zavala Elementary, Murray said the parent drops their child off at the front entrance of the school and is not allowed inside. The student uses a hand sanitizer as they enter the building. Murray said they also check and record that child's temperature and ask the students questions about their own medical condition. If the child is younger, they ask the parent outside the school. Playground equipment. The rule right now, Murray said, is that ECISD playgrounds are off limits, according to guidance from TEA for the summer. Students in our child care programs and summer school are not allowed to access that playground equipment. We don't know what that's going to look like in the fall. What we do know is if kids have access to it, then it will have to be cleaned on a regular basis. Currently in the classrooms, items students use for toys, manipulatives, and crayons are changed out and cleaned after the morning session. The afternoon session students get new sets of everything. The district, Mary said, may want more teachers, but they don't exist right now. That kind of forces us to think differently about all types of adults and how we'll serve the kids. Football. The University Interscholastic League, UIL, is providing guidance for the summer on how the district can engage students. So starting June 8th, we're actually going to resume some athletic activities as well as some extracurricular activities using the guidance of the UIL, Murray said. No decision has been made about what the fall is going to look like for any sport right now, but we know that the UIL is monitoring that. And at some point this summer, a guidance will come out, and that will affect the whole state of Texas, not just ECISD. Right now, we're waiting, Murray said. We anticipate there will be something. We're just not quite sure what that's going to look like yet. Murray said leading through the pandemic has been an exciting chance for him because for the first time in over 100 years, we have an incredible opportunity to redesign the way that we do school for kids in a very positive manner. It's the classic turning lemons into lemonade scenario. We've experienced a crisis in our world over the last 3 months, and it is our opportunity to turn that crisis into significant gain for the students that we're serving. So, as a superintendent, it excites me to think about all of the possibilities that lie before us, and it's up to us as educators and as a community to embrace the potential change and improvement that we have before us and open our minds to thinking differently about this work. Murray is part of an organization called Chiefs for Change, a group of urban superintendents from across the country, which makes up half the group. The other half is state commissioners of education, and they talk every 2 weeks. Those are very in-depth philosophical conversations, as well as the strategic and tactical conversations as we unpack this opportunity and think about how we apply new solutions into our own environments. When you talk to people around the country, you know each of us works with different variables. The state finance system is different from state to state. Curriculums are different. We serve different populations, etc. Those are incredible conversations, Miri said. He also is part of a group called the Texas School Alliance, which is made up of the largest 35 school districts in Texas. Muri said they talk several times a week about what we are learning, what we're thinking, what challenges and opportunities lie before us as a state, and so sharing, listening to those leaders. Separate and apart from these groups, Muri said he's also talked to colleagues he's met along his superintendent's journey that work in a variety of different states. During the board meeting Tuesday night, Muri said the board will talk more about what teacher compensation will be for the upcoming school year, but the board's priority has been hourly employees. Today, the number one budget priority of our board of trustees is compensation specifically for our hourly employees. Our trustees want to ensure that our hourly folks are well taken care of. We did a good job for our teachers this past year, but all we're paying attention to compensation for all our ECISD employees. So more details specifically on Tuesday night, Miri said. 13 COVID-19 patients at Medical Center Hospital by Michael Merlo. Medical Center Hospital officials reported that 13 COVID-19 patients are in the hospital during the virtual hospital briefing Thursday. MCH President and CEO Russell Tippin said that 13 is the highest amount of in-house patients they've had so far. MCH Chief Nursing Officer Christian Timmons spoke on the increased cases in the last few weeks, saying that they are receiving a lot of people who were previously at home with the virus but weren't recovering. I think that's where we're seeing our admissions more so, she said. One of the patients is in the pediatrics unit. Six are on the designated floor, two are from focused care at Odessa, and another six are in the critical care unit, four of whom who are on ventilators. Timmons said that our little one on the pediatric floor is not the one that we anticipated who's having a little bit of breathing difficulties. One of the patients in MCH's seven central designated central floor was reported as a prisoner from Fort Stockton. The Fort Stockton prison reportedly had multiple cases earlier in the week. Tippin said that MCH is prepared as numbers continue to increase in the county. We've been sitting here pretty much waiting on this since day one, adding that they have a sufficient amount of personal protective equipment and testing supplies. Odessa Regional Medical Center President Stacy Brown reported that out of 440 tests, 21 people have tested positive, 415 had negative results, and four are pending. Three patients positive with the virus are in the ICU. None are on ventilators. As of Thursday, Ector County reportedly has had 185 positive cases of COVID-19 and 13 are probable. The health department website detailed that 43 of the cases are active in the county, 137 people have recovered from the virus, and five Ector County residents have died from COVID-19 related illnesses. Odessa Mayor David Turner reported that he is quarantining at his home after coming in contact with someone who had the virus. He said that he feels fine and is waiting to get tested. Timmons said that Focused Care has not reached out to MCH to retest residents, but that MCH has been testing Focused Care residents before they return to the nursing home facilities. She said that Tuesday and Wednesday, MCH tested 42 Focused Care employees at one of their clinics, and results are pending. Two Focused Care at Odessa residents are at MCH with the virus, and one is at ORMC. One Focused Care at Crane resident is also at ORMC. The county also reported that the employee who tested positive from the Deering's nursing home in Odessa remains the only positive case out of that facility. Quick hits. Rabies Clinic. Wilson's Corner and Dr. Henry Lead with University Small Animal Clinic has scheduled a rabies clinic from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Saturday at Wilson's Corner Grocery, 16514 South Highway 385. Shots for dogs are $42.50 full set and $54.50 full set with Bordetella. Rabies only $15. Rattlesnake $30 and puppy shots $37. Shots for cats are $45 outdoor and $22.50 for inside only. Rabies $15 and house call $25. House calls, text name, phone number, address, pet's name, gender, age, color, and shots you want to 432-239-0123. Include records. Visit www.facebook.com/Wilson Corner Grocery. Traveling Comic Book Store. Traveling Comic Book Store has been scheduled from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Saturday at the Holiday Inn Express and Suites, 5321 JBS Parkway. Admission is free. Visit tinyurl.com/YC6677GA. Hunks. The Brewery, 1409 East 7th, has scheduled a Hunks live performance from 8 to 10 p.m. July 2nd. For tickets or more information, visit tinyurl.com/Y7F4J757. Odessa and Midland Chambers join forces to promote Buying in the Basin by Tony Venegas. Midland. The Odessa and Midland Chambers of Commerce combined forces as part of the latest initiative to encourage local spending. The Buy the Basin campaign was officially relaunched during a news conference at the Wagner Knoll Performing Arts Center Thursday with officials from both chambers, Midland Mayor Patrick Payton, Odessa City Councilman Dewey Bryant, and other local business owners in attendance. We always like the opportunities for the Odessa and Midland Chambers to come together, Odessa Chamber of Commerce CEO Renee Henderson Earls said. This is a perfect partnership to remind people to buy the basin, not only for Odessa and Midland, but for the area towns as well. We want people to reinvest your money here. That reinvestments in the local economy is something that the leadership who spoke Thursday placed a major emphasis on. A June 2020 study from the Perryman Group detailed that a job would be created in the area if people spent another 49 cents at a retail store, 23 cents at a local restaurant, and 37 cents for personal services. The study also states that an increase in local purchases to levels seen in other areas would lead to an estimated $2.4 billion increase in direct spending. Ray Perryman, president and CEO of the Perryman Group, was in attendance and also provided the numbers for the study during the launch of the original Buy the Basin campaign in the 1990s. He added that the emphasis on the local economy was even more important given the events of the pandemic as well as the price of oil in the Permian Basin. I really commend the two chambers for putting this together as effectively and quickly as they have, because it's just so important to the entire region that we look at and try to do everything we can to be able to work through this, Perryman said. Bryant emphasized a similar sentiment. I think this is really important for the basin, Bryant said. This is about our local businesses, local owners. It's our friends, our neighbors, and our jobs. It's important that we jumpstart this process, and there's no better way than concentrating on buying from within our communities and helping us move forward. In his remarks, Patrick Payton also touched on coming together as a region and says that this initiative is just the tip of the iceberg in terms of extending the Permian Basin's influence. One of the ways that we do that is that we make sure throughout the basin, all of us are supporting one another, he said. It's not a Midland issue or an Odessa issue. It includes all of us, and it even spans into New Mexico in many matters. Seeing that support from local officials is also something that stands out for Midland businesswoman Susie Hitchcock Hall and president and CEO of Susie's South 40 Confections Incorporated. I think it's awesome, she said. I felt like this is appropriate and timely. This is typical of Midland Odessa, and that's what they do. The new campaign is also a way to come full circle for many of the officials involved in the process. A similar campaign with the same name started up in the early 1990s, and Henderson Earls even had the original shirt from the campaign, as well as an Odessa American article about the initial launch. The updated logo reflects the new ways that business is done as technology is updated. Given the circumstances, she added that perfect timing to revive the campaign with an updated look. With the downfall in the economy and with COVID requiring businesses to think differently and offer curbside service, takeout, and online purchasing, it just all came together, she said. On the net, odessachamber.com, MidlandTXChamber.com.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.